I welcome you to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, and I am Reverend Karen Rice, the spiritual leader of this community, and I see some people are back from vacation. I know others are gone again, and that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. The title of my message is The Metaphysics of Relationship. And we notice when there's people coming and going, don't we? We notice that. And then the news invites us to experience in a more profound and very sad way that there are souls coming and going off the planet, and sometimes in cruel and ways that are not okay. So in honor of those people who were involved in the recent shootings over the weekend, I just want to say that this talk is about the metaphysics of relationship and the sadness that we feel. That's what that is. That's what we're going to talk about. That's stuff that happens because we may not have known anybody, but we're still impacted because we know what's right and what's wrong. We know, you know, that it's just not okay for this to happen. And I want to say that I think sometimes because this seems to be in our world now, I want to remind us all that we're in choice as to how we respond. And so let us not move to be more afraid. Let us stand in that perfect knowing that things like this should not happen, and that we will always be a stand for peace, that we will always be a stand for life, and we do that in a united way, and we celebrate life. So I want to just put that out there so we can know. And I think that everything we teach here is very intentional in a way that we can apply the skills that we learn and that we believe in and the spiritual truth of our teaching that can help us move through the big changes going on globally. So that's all I'm going to say about that. So let me talk to you about the metaphysics of relationship and what that means. Sometimes my beloved Hugh, who's having a birthday on the 13th this month, I'm happy you got here in time so we could sing to you. Didn't I sound great? Did I harmonize? I tried to be really quiet. So happy birthday, darling, and happy birthday to my beloved friends. But once in a while, Hugh will say to me, you know, I'm not comfortable with that term metaphysics. He'll be very honest with me. He critiques me, like many of you do. It's a good thing. We're striving for excellence, so go for it, you know? And so he will tell me that his discomfort with the word metaphysics is that we don't really understand what it means. And many people associate that as some kind of a New Age term. And metaphysics is not a New Age term. It's certainly appropriate in our understanding of New Age teachings, which just kind of is a grab bag for a whole bunch of things. Everything that they don't know what to do with at the bookstore goes in the New Age section, including us. But I wanted to state that Cheryl read from the Science of Mind textbook and spoke about Ernest Holmes as our founder, but we don't worship Ernest Holmes, right? We understand that what he did, he always said, I didn't bring anything new. I can't tell you how much I love that because that's how I kind of feel in my own life. It's like, I work my tushy off to be creative, and yet you don't, I know I don't bring anything new. I'm just always looking for new ways of stating the principle that is so profound. So Holmes didn't create a principle. He synthesized a bunch of ideas, and we now have, from the work that he did, a method of teaching universal truths that are not just, there's nothing special about us. There's nothing special about religious science, except that I think everything about us is special because we're so open and accepting and loving, and yes, we have a food consciousness, but I think a lot of, you know, I don't know if it's organizational or it's a church thing, but I think that, and I'm going to be giving a talk at the end of the month called Everything is Food. Does anybody know where I got that talk title from? No. No, really, seriously, it's a song. You don't know that? Don't make me sing it. It's from the Popeye movie in the 1970s, right around 1979 or 1980. That movie was so delightful. I took my children, but I really took me. And then I bought the music for it, and we sang it for years. And so my children, we can all sing it. So anything yummy or food-related, we start singing that song. Everything is food. You guys should learn it and do it for us one day. That'd be cool. You can Google it. You can get the, you can hear it on, it's very funny. It'd actually be really fun to show the video from it because I watched it in my work I'm doing. So metaphysics is actually a term that was coined by Aristotle way back when. You know, that's like the 4th century before the time, before the Christian era. You know, 300 and I think he was born in 347 or something like that. Aristotle, who studied under Plato, who studied under Socrates. That's right. So it comes out of classical philosophy, and it has a very simple meaning. Meta is beyond. So anytime we use the term metaphysical, we're speaking about that which is beyond the physical. So it's very easy to see that we're speaking about spirituality. And as the world continues to change, and as spirituality changes, as religion is sort of losing its stronghold that it used to have, we're looking for lots of terms, and we're looking for people to be comfortable with those terms. And so I wanted to give you a little education on where metaphysics, that idea of it, comes from. And then when we put it together with relationship, which, by the way, was just my unique little, I just had an idea, I had a thought, and it became a message, and now we're talking about it, and it's quite exciting. But what we're talking about is that which happens in relationship. You know, so relationship is the way things come together, people, but also in the way we relate to anything. So we're always having a relationship to the conditions in our lives and the conditions in the world and our neighbors and our relatives, but it's bigger than people. So when we look at the metaphysics of relationship, we're talking about that something that is going on beyond what we can see, what we can know, and sometimes even more than what we sense. So we're just talking about the God stuff. We're talking about the divine order of life. We're talking about this exquisite way that there's meaning and purpose in our life, and we can notice it, we can learn from it, we can apply principle as we move through different experiences, or we don't have to. We can just move through life and sort of feel the effect of all the things that unfold, both the good and the bad. So I found this quote that I wanted to use to tie it all together, and this is the quote that I based the message on, because when we study the metaphysics of relationship, always we're given this opportunity to see that it's not just my relationship to you or to Point of Light or to a whole community. But as we examine that, we see that we are really looking at our very own personal relationship to the divine. It's always about that. So we certainly need each other, and I'll be talking a great deal about community today, but it's kind of one of those paradoxes, because in the end, all that really matters is your own personal and individualized relationship with the divine. And so that's where we always start. How much can I recognize the presence of God in my life right now? That's always the starting point. So we're in last Thursday, Emma in the evenings, we're studying reading together, Emma Curtis Hopkins. Last week we studied the chapter on faith, and it's never any coincidence, I don't think. I think it's sort of the hand of God and that perfect divine timing always. But we studied the chapter on faith, and Emma Curtis Hopkins has a very specific definition for faith, which is different than anywhere else you would look for it. and very insightful. The Christian mystics, and I always say she's my favorite Christian mystic, they speak from that meta place, that place beyond. They have encounters with the divine, and then they, like a poet, who can be a mystic also, but they try and put words to it. And someone said in the class last Thursday, this is just like the Bible gives stories and the use of metaphors. This is the same way that Jesus used parables, and he never really answered their questions. He would throw out another question. So what happens is it creates a space for the individual to process all of that information. I love that quote where this one always really makes me think, where the disciples were saying to Jesus one day, well, you know, they say that you're this, they say that you're that, or that you're John the Baptist, and you know, and all of that. Who are you? And how do we answer that question? And Jesus said to them, ah, but who do you say I am? And I think that is one of the greatest metaphysical questions for us to ponder. Perhaps we could take that home this week. Who do you say I am? Jesus asks. And the way that we answer those questions determines our relationship to what we believe about Jesus, to the spiritual study, perhaps to the Bible. It doesn't matter. But Emma Curtis Hopkins says that faith was the magic wisdom of Jesus of Nazareth. And the reason she says that it was the wisdom of Jesus is because he demonstrated this strong conviction. Listen carefully here. He demonstrated a strong conviction in his own ability to command the law. Thank you. I was going, that's bad timing, Tracy. That's bad timing. I'm leading up to a big amen. Somebody bent over to talk to Reverend Cheryl just before the punchline. Good save. Thank you. That's one of the reasons I love you so much. All right. Emma said, there's this wisdom of Jesus, right? The magic wisdom of Jesus of Nazareth. And the reason she said that is the definition of faith. And the reason for that is that Jesus had a strong conviction in his own ability to command the law. I mean, think about it. What is being said here? He had a conviction in his own ability to command the law. So we call it miracles, and religion teaches that it was divine intervention, but Jesus never thought he was divinely intervening. He was commanding the law in the same way that we are invited to command the law in our own life. We have this instinct within us. I've been talking about it for weeks, actually, for years. And we have this instinct with executiveness within us waiting our firm command. Emma Curtis Hopkins, again, Emma's words. So there's this creative new knowledge that's always flowing, and we can see it, but we are also, as we dabble in the metaphysics of it, the spirituality of it, as we play in it, we are free to reach out and touch that knowledge, to access that wisdom, to imitate the life that the man Jesus lived and gave as this great, great example of what's possible. Here's what Holmes said about all of that. We should realize that all the energy, all the action, all the vitality, all the enthusiasm of the universe is flowing through us. Okay, hear that again. We should realize that all the energy, all the action, vitality, enthusiasm of the universe, all of it is flowing through us. And then in big, giant capital letters, we should gladly open our consciousness to it. Ooh. Open your mind. Open your heart so you can feel it. Play with it intellectually, reason on it. But it's right here. It's just waiting for us to notice it. And so back to that opening quote that somehow I got sidetracked from, I can't remember now, but the quote that inspired the talk is this: nothing could be, again, Ernest Holmes, nothing could be more intimate than the personal relationship between the individual and the divine presence. God is both the center and the source of each person's being. So there's this oneness that we talk about. There's this idea of one mind. It is the mind of God, and that mind is my mind now, Dr. Holmes. There's this difficulty I feel in trying to teach it, because you can only experience it. You can't just learn about it by studying it. But the thing is, we are a piece of it. As an individualized expression of the divine, we are a part of it. We are in a relationship of oneness. Now, Emma Curtis Hopkins said we should have the faith of God, not faith in God. There is a twist here, that in metaphysics, in New Thought, we address this. In religion, they sometimes argue that this is inaccurate, but it more likely is not in God, biblically, when the Bible scholars try and address it. It's that faith of God. And the Christian scholars, the Bible, the Christian ministers argue about it, because they say God doesn't need faith, but they're missing the whole point. That's not what we're saying. We should have the faith of God. What would that be like? Right? So we're not just believing that there's an entity here that's going to bestow us with gifts. We are a part of that which is God. It is one. It is not two. And when we join in consciousness, we realize that we have an experience of it. So Holmes says it like this. This will really help you. I love this. I haven't heard this illustration in years. It's like ice. If I want to make ice cubes, which I now like store-bought ice better than my own, but if I want to make ice cubes, I fill up my ice tray with water. And so ice is water, right? All ice is some water, but not all water is ice. And so this is another way of looking at that idea of that the ocean, there's the ocean, and that we are a drop of water from the ocean. So it's the same theory put in a slightly different way. So we're all part of the whole, and in the same way that each of us is a part of that great whole, I see this morning that each person sitting here is a part of this community. So as a community, we're a whole. Now, I talked all about wholes, W-H-O-L-A-S, last week. So you have to, if you weren't here, you have to listen to that talk. It's up on the web already, and you should do that, because really, it's kind of in my top 10, I think. That's just my feeling. Okay. Moving on. So I want to tell you about my own experience of encountering this teaching for the first time. So I step into a Science of Mind community because I want to learn about the Course in Miracles. I'm really interested in studying the Course in Miracles. I have been religious. I do not want any more church. I did not want to be any more religious. But I was so intrigued with everything that was going on in that building and the people. And it turned out that the person teaching or facilitating the Course in Miracles class was a licensed practitioner. He was a religious science practitioner. And so I started asking questions like, what does that symbol mean? And then he would tell me, he would give me a short explanation as to what the teaching was about, how the teaching symbol worked. And little by little, I became more curious, and I began going to the Wednesday night service because that was much safer than a Sunday morning. And then after that, I started taking classes, and then pretty soon I was hooked, and I really loved it. But what happened for me was that I fell in love with the teaching first. And I honestly, as I was thinking about the metaphysics of relationship, I have a feeling, I was reflecting back thinking, I think I was guarded. I didn't want to fall in love with the people. Because if I fell in love with the people, then I might want to join the church, and I certainly didn't want to do that ever again in my life. So I started taking classes, and the classes, the education, began to touch my heart, and I began to change, which is the whole point. You know, we say that we are a teaching organization, not a proselytizing organization. And so I started to change. I started to have more self-compassion for myself. I started to realize that I'm not a victim. And in fact, that I don't have to feel like a victim in any way in life, except in the middle of the night when my husband changed the channel after I just put Oprah on. He was sound asleep, and he woke up and changed the channel because he can't bear Oprah for, it didn't even have volume. He smelled her. He knew I had done something he didn't like, and he woke up last night and changed the channel back to a movie. It was awful, and so I had to scold him, of course. It all turned out fine. You see, we're here together today, right? See, life happens. Relationship, you know, smooths out those rough edges sometimes. So I started studying, and I began to realize, oh, my God, I'm not a victim, and therefore, why should I fear involvement in a church? Because that other church didn't hurt me. They didn't do anything bad. I loved my experience there. I just didn't know how to leave when it was time to leave. And so with that new information that I could know, now I can't blame anybody. I become empowered. And I see that I live a life of choice, and everything changes when we realize we live a life of choice. And not only then could I let that old church off the hook, but I could leave everybody else that I was carrying around that had done me wrong. I could let that all go because none of that mattered anymore. I began to realize that people are always doing the best they can with what they've been given. So throughout life, we are constantly shaping and reshaping and creating and recreating our lives and our choices. And I'll tell you something, I really think this is the purpose of life. I read I have a favorite passage in the Course of Miracles. I studied that for a long time before I found the Science of Mind, and it bridged me. It was a gorgeous way to be bridged in a rather metaphysical new understanding of seeing the Bible in this great personal, the symbols that I could apply in my own life. It was rich with wisdom now, a deeper wisdom than I had ever realized before, and I found this quote in the Course of Miracles, and it said something like this. After like 10 years of studying the Course of Miracles, I finally see this tiny one little quote. It says, "You have come this far so that you might experience forgiveness here, comma, now." You have come this far on your journey so that you might experience forgiveness now, right here. So for whatever reason, I read that book cover to cover 4 times before I saw, that's a lot. Did it in a week once. I realized that for me, now you have to interpret it in your own way, but for me what that meant was that there will be experiences in my living, in my relationships, where I will have the opportunity to practice forgiveness. And then you get to wrap your mind around a whole new way of looking at forgiveness, because then it tells you in that beautiful big blue book, it tells you nobody's done anything wrong. It's just the way you have interpreted it. So now I want to take you all the way back to Emma Curtis Hopkins, who says these gorgeous words. Many of you have heard me say this before because I love this quote. Emma says, "If God is forgiving, we must be for receiving." Yeah. Right? If God is for giving, 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 and giving, then we must be that vessel to receive. We must open ourselves to be expressions of the divine. You know, every night of your life before you close your eyes in slumber, choose. Choose what it is that you desire to experience the next day. For in the morrow, she says, tomorrow, you have a whole new slate of possibilities. Choose the things you desire to experience in your day every night before you close your eyes in slumber. Because there is that executiveness within you waiting for you to choose to put your command on the law. Can you imagine how different your life would be if every night we chose? Every night, the last little thought was, how do I want to show up tomorrow? We're planting that seed. And you know what happens when you plant a seed? Pfft, voila, you grow something. And so I see this as the very purpose of my life. You get to choose what works for you. We're creating, we're recreating, we're learning the metaphysics of relationship. All of humanity is engaged in this process. We are invited to try and process the things we hear in the news and to use those God qualities to get us clear again, to help us find our sense of balance, to be able to stand and to have fulfilling days and to, oh, I love that happy song. I love that happy song. When you sing that happy song, and nobody, quite frankly, nobody does it like you guys, that tells me that I can have that, I can feel that, I can be that, because you know what? We're feeling it while you're singing it, and we're trying to fill in the words that we know there. I love that part about holding up the roof, you know, and know it, standing for your truth, and oh my goodness, there's so much important stuff going on. We are practicing metaphysical relationship. We are practicing that individually. We are practicing that collectively. We are practicing that socially and politically and spiritually. It is life. And life is alive always. Life is an energy that is always moving and it circles back upon itself. Now listen carefully to what I'm about to say. Holmes says, life circles back upon itself. And so I get an image that some of, as I look around at the people in my life, the relationships I have with others, I notice, because sometimes it's easier to notice it in other people than it is in yourself, right? I notice that it appears that some people have shown up on this planet with a theme for their life. Some people seem to be always working on health, right? So the way they're on this planet, because that's the way they have been called to return to their wholeness. And so all the work that they can do to understand the wholeness and reconnecting to spirit itself looks like it's a healing of the body. But it's more than that. It's just that's where they're going to get the richest lesson. Maybe. I don't know. I'm making this up. Don't take it too serious. And then there are other people. If you look around, it looks like some other people are here, and it looks like they're experiencing poverty or less than, or that they can't have enough of whatever it is that they want. It looks like some people, the theme for some people's life is a prosperity theme. And that they are here in order to experience the wholeness and the fullness of God, to learn it through that experience. And then I sometimes think that there's, certainly not me, but there are people who seem to come to learn relationships through marriage, through lots of encounters and marriage and divorce and all the things that go along with that. And so we all have something. You know, don't be hard on yourself. Practice self-compassion, because we all are here for something. But ultimately, God is forgiving you giving you, God is for, giving you everything you need for that experience of wholeness. It is within your reach. You can reach out and touch it even now, even if it feels so obscure to you. It is already available to you. And our job is to open ourselves to be informed and to choose and ultimately to realize that we are called to command the hands of God in our life. Last Thursday, we studied the chapter on faith, and over, Emma said, "Concerning the work of my hands, command ye me." But if you read it very carefully, it is not me standing before God or humbly kneeling before God saying, "Show me what is my work." It is not that. It is the opposite of that. It is God speaking to us in a very personal way. Imagine divine hands in front of you and a big booming voice, if it helps, saying, "Concerning the work of these divine hands, of that which you desire to experience in your life, command thee me." Put your command on the law. Jesus came to show us how to do that. It's so evident and so obscure all at the same time. It is the metaphysics of relationship, and that really explains it all. Neil Donald Walsh, in his I have so many favorite authors. Good, great book, The Storm Before the Calm, has some questions. Neil Donald Walsh says, "How is it possible that 7 billion people all seem to want the same thing? How is it possible that we all seem to want peace, security, happiness, contentment, and somehow we fail to attain it?" Clearly, we're all in this together. But he says we spend so much energy feeling otherwise, right? We invest so much energy in talking about what ails us, in talking about what happened in the news, in talking about how corrupt this or that is, and so little energy in imagining a world that works for all. I'm here to tell you that I will be doing my part to move us into conversation where we are not talking about what's wrong, where we have an opportunity to converse about the world we dare to imagine that does not have headlines that I have to talk about on a Sunday morning. Neil Donald Walsh said, "Is it possible that there's something about life that we have not fully understood yet?" Yes. It's the metaphysics of relationship, because it's hard to talk about. It's the wisdom of Jesus that most people have not acknowledged yet. It is the mysticism of in every faith, in every spiritual tradition, there is something that comes from that stream of mysticism. And so then he asks the final question, is it possible that if we understood this, we could shift our lives? And I say, yes, of course it is what this teaching is all about. Our teaching proves it, and our teaching dares us to go out and prove it to ourselves. Because that's the only way it matters. That's the only way you can embody truth, is to play in it. It's science. It's religious science, because we are invited to do the experiments. And this universe is our vast laboratory. What shall we produce? Well, I know what I want to produce more of. It's a good question. Sometimes people change in relationships, and it's difficult to figure out how to move on. I mean, we're good together. And we seem to know we have an instinct to be together. Sue Witter is always telling me, because she knows all those brain studies, that we're hardwired for it. How do you say it? We're We are hardwired for connection with each other, right? So, you know, so therefore, I believe spiritual community will stick around, even as religion shifts and changes and looks different. They're all going to start looking more like New Thought, I think, is what's going to happen. It's funny because we used to say, oh, that Joel Osteen, he must be reading The Course in Miracles, or he's studying Ernest Holmes. And now we're realizing that, no, it's not us, it's truth. It's just a universal truth that everybody has access to, and I believe that great spiritual leaders will find more and more ways of presenting information, and it probably will look like what we have been doing forever, because we understand metaphysical relationships, especially after this morning. You really understand it now. But I want to tell you about something that Holmes said that I always think of when I think about community, when I think of how we're better together. I think back to a time, it was actually 1959, and Ernest Holmes was doing the final church dedication that he ever did. He passed in 1960, and it was in the Whittier Church of Religious Science. I spoke there once. I was like on the very same platform from which he gave this spectacular talk. And this was a meaningful talk for a lot of reasons. But the only part I'm going to talk about this morning is, you can ask me later if you want to know more, is that he started the talk this way. So now this is the transcription of his actual words at the dedication of the Whittier Church of Religious Science in 1959. He did a brief welcome, and then he said, thank you all for being here. We are here today for this dedication. They're dedicating a brand new church 60 years ago from right now. He said, I think it's wonderful. I think it's a miracle. But we are here because you are here. And we are here because your consciousness and the consciousness of your ministers and the consciousness of all your practitioners and the consciousness of all you wonderful people, that consciousness has cleaved together. And what has happened? Power. Like the weaving of a rope where one strand will hold no weight, but united, it will hold terrific weight. Woven together because we're better together. In community, in relationship, we are a demonstration, hear this carefully, we are a demonstration in community of organized energy. You know what that means? Think about it. If you're listening, for those of you who aren't sleeping right now, we are organized. I've always wanted to say that. I'm so sorry. Forgive me, Lord, for I have sinned. What that means is that when we follow along in a conversation like this, we're in the same sync of energy. That there's a rhythm. It's like we're going somewhere together. It's like those strands are woven together. And so there's this gorgeous way that we are the we are weaving, but we are the weavers. And I don't know that we get it. We think about being woven together and the gorgeous way Spirit brings us together in community, and we meet just the right people and we fall in love. And so I want to talk and I want to conclude the message this morning by saying community changes. Things happen. People, sometimes people just get all they can get and they're not interested anymore and they go away. It's not a bad thing. Sometimes we experience here, and every church does really, but in the Phoenix area, we have a high population of people with more than one residence. right? Where they spend part of the year here and part of the year somewhere else. So right now we're missing, and especially right now, we get really lonely for our people that have gone away. Sometimes I get a little annoyed when they leave me in October, you know, but it's so fun when they come home. I'm so happy to see them because we've fallen in love together. We have people that move. That's kind of an ongoing thing. People that move away. This coming Saturday, we will be having a celebration in honor of Dean and Joanne Henson because they are moving to Texas. My heart is so sad. Dean is the very first person I physically met. I talked to Cheryl on the phone. I talked to Nancy Noel on the phone and the internet. But Dean was the very first person I met face to face. We were meeting at a restaurant, and he came out in that parking lot when I pulled up in my little Mustang, and he said, "You must be Reverend Karen." Nobody would, it was a convertible Mustang. Nobody would drive a convertible Mustang in the desert. "You must be Reverend Karen from California." And we fell in love, and we never quit loving each other. And then Joanne became the first board president when the board changed, and it was no longer the board I inherited. Joanne was my very first board president. We went to New Orleans together for an amazing conference. I have so many memories with them, and they're moving to Texas. So please come join us as we celebrate them on Saturday. And then on September 14th, we have this opportunity to recognize that people also pass. We will be doing a memorial service for John Stillman on September the 14th. I miss John. He would be sitting right back there in his motorized wheelchair, you know? And people pass. We all will. We give up the weight of this which doesn't support us very well anymore to go on to a new expression because we understand this gorgeous eternality of life. So community is always changing, and that's why some people don't want to get involved because it's hard to let go when it changes. And yet, we are hardwired to connect with each other, and so it is necessary. It makes our hearts delight with joy. I want to close this morning with a quote from Julia Cameron. Oh, what a gorgeous woman. She says, "We all start out the same way. We are rich in dreams and nothing more. And if we're lucky, we find friends to believe in our dreams with us. And when we do that, creative cluster becomes a magnet to attract our good. This is the gift of spiritual community. This is what we are called to do. It is why you're sitting in a room right now. This is the very nature of who we are in our understanding of ourselves, of each other, of what's going on in the world. We're good for each other. If you're not involved in a small conversation circle, think about doing that. It's a great way to get to know people in a small group first, and then we grow in relationship. We need this, and the world needs us to have this. I'm so grateful. So grateful. And so I'd like to anchor all of these ideas in the powerful words of prayer. So if I could ask at this time for the practitioners and ministers and ministerial candidates, if you would all just stand and surround the room, we'll give it our best. Just take a nice deep breath. And become aware of the person sitting to your left and the person sitting to your right, the person in front of you and the person behind you, the ecclesiastical team surrounding you. And so we breathe this in. We feel and sense this consciousness that is a consciousness of joining, of relating, of knowing, something great is happening. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is the activity of life. It is pulsing and moving, expressing even here right now. God, as that infinite wisdom of all the universe, that glorious sense of perfect harmony, the way all things move in that divine rhythm, that energized divine order of which we are a part of. I feel the love of God and I recognize it at the core of each and every person sitting in a seat, standing in a circle around this sanctuary, and even at the sound of my voice, for there is no place where God is not. And so in this moment, we focus our attention on recognition, on realizing our oneness with Spirit itself, knowing that there is that light of truth within us. And by the very words of this prayer, it is fanned into a greater flame, a golden, beautiful flame of truth. And it is that light, it is that divine light that shows us the way, that allows us to put one foot in front of the other, that allows us to open ourselves and connect with other people, to understand that sense of wholeness in our union as one. And so together, it's easy to know the faith of God. It's easy to know that the example of Jesus, that divine wisdom of commanding our word, is ours to use. It's wonderful to become that vessel, to receive the grace of God that is pouring, streaming into our lives, into this community. It is that very prosperity nature of life that fills us with everything we need to financially sustain this community. And it is the same flow of love. It is the love that is comforting those who are saddened at this time. Anyone who is experiencing loss, any of us that are impacted by the news of the day. And so we breathe in a greater truth. We see that life is reconfiguring and recreating itself individually, collectively, socially, politically, in absolutely every way. And we allow ourselves to be a part of the change. We strengthen ourselves by knowing we are one strand that is woven together to become a strong and powerful rope that sustains us, that gives us that visible way of seeing the presence of God right before our eyes and in the eyes of the next person. Oh, so much love to witness, so much goodness to bring to this planet, so much that we can do simply by shifting our consciousness and knowing again that God is love and therefore I am too. We breathe this in, and in the very vibrancy and movement of that inspiration, that breath of God, we are kissed anew. We are healed of that which ails us, and we know that even as we may experience our loved ones going through difficult times, that even in their life right there also is the full presence of God. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit, for all of these blessings, for knowing that as we command the word in this powerful way, life happens, that we move in the grace of God. And so feeling this gratitude stirring within me, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that already responds. And together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.